Long time no see. How are you?
Yeah, long time no see indeed. Yeah. I
How have you
haven't been.
been?
Yeah, I've been good. How have you been?
I've been very good. Very good. Very well. Thanks. Is this our second or our third talk?
This is our third talk. Our third talk, yeah.
Well, what are you going to talk about today?
I'm just going to adjust my internet because I think there's something that's breaking up a bit. So
okay.
Just adjusting my internet.
Okay. If I was a good YouTuber, I'd have elevator music or I'd edit. Guess I better pause.
Hello.
All right, sorry. There we go.
Yeah, I just had to switch to cellular data.
Oh, okay.
My Wi-Fi is having some issues. That's why I'm on my phone.
Well, you're looking good on your phone. You nice clear camera. Phones often have better cameras than mics.
So actually, it's quite interesting because it's the first time that I'm having a conversation with you, but I haven't been religiously consuming your content.
That's probably good for your soul.
I wouldn't say that. No, I've been distracted with other matters.
Oh, probably more important.
Well, I wouldn't say more important, but I might say more pressing.
Okay. Well, what matters have been distracting you?
I mean, it's not that I've been an active participant in these matters, but as far as consuming content regarding things, I've been so. I don't. Again, I don't know if this conversation would be one that we'd put out because I want to have like a level of just blunt honesty throughout it. So I'm just like prefacing it with that. So it's not me trying to get a message out there, but I do want to hear like thoughts of someone like yourself on the current situation that we're in.
Okay, which situation? Well, what we'll do, what I always do, and that we'll record it, and we will, let me get my notes up so that I can we will record it, and then afterwards we will see. And if it's something that we think is appropriate to share or worthy of sharing, we'll share it. If not, you'll just have a copy and you can refer back to it, and that'll be it.
I know that it's not a guarantee. I'm just putting my intentions out there. It's not like I'm here trying to corner you, but because some of this might possibly get blunter than usual.
Oh, I like blunt. Let's go for it.
So I mean, I just want to hear what are your thoughts on like the current, let's say, global political, geopolitical situation? Like, what are you? Because I've been out of the loop. I haven't been watching anything from the Bridges of Meaningosphere for a long time. So I don't even know what your thoughts are like on how things have developed.
Well, you're gonna have to be more specific because it's a very big world.
Right, well, that is true, but I guess I'm talking about like the situation with the mandatory medical action, the whole coronavirus situation in general, and how much have you been thinking about these things? Or like, I know it's not something that you wouldn't not be thinking about given that it's a front and center of reality, but have your just basically let's start with that, Matt. Let's start with the seeming imposition of a global coordinated action.
Imposition of global coordinated action. Well, clearly there is a virus that has gone around the world. And so part of what's interesting about this go round, as opposed to, let's say, the last pandemic that was of this magnitude, which that we know of. I mean, we could have had smaller pandemics that are less consequential and less life-threatening that we're not paying attention to because it doesn't hit our attention. Let's say the HPV virus. So I remember when my children were getting vaccinated when they were young, the doctor comes out with this HPV virus vaccination. And I'm like, what's this about? Well, this can cause cervical cancer in women. Okay, and it's sexually transmitted. Okay, well, why give it to my daughters? They're not having sex. So, you know, on and on and on. But all right, I finally, you know, I put the doctor off a few times and finally said, okay, go ahead. And they got the HPV. Now, what has the HPV virus been gone epidemic in the world? We don't know. HPV is a very long-term virus that might eventually cause cervical cancer. And I know there's some doctors who watch my channel. If we publish this, they'll chime in. And so there's a virus that's gone around the world, and we probably haven't paid much attention to it. The medical community has. They developed a vaccine for it. That vaccine has been given to children long before they're sexually active. Yada, 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 yada. We pay no attention to that. So now we have the coronavirus. And let's compare the coronavirus to the Spanish flu that happened at the beginning of the 20th century. Now, the beginning of the 20th century, the world had a degree of globalization that obviously it had more than a century before it, but not as much as a century after it. So the Spanish flu goes around the world, partly hitching a ride because of all the movement that went on because of the First World War, on and on and on and on. But we really didn't have the kind of vaccination technology like we have today. So now we have the coronavirus, and the coronavirus sweeps around the world. Could it be a human engineered virus? Seems quite possible. Even if you listen to mass media now, after the Trump administration is gone, now even in the mass media, you'll regularly hear people say, well, could be possible, could be possible. At the beginning, nobody, you know, we had that whole thing got all caught up in American politics, and it's certainly there in the middle of world politics, because if in fact it can be definitively demonstrated that this virus was cooked up in a Chinese lab and accidentally got out into the world, well, people are going to have, that's going to impact China's reputation in the world standing. So there's that whole thing. And that's out there. But that's not what people are paying attention to. Right now, everybody's paying attention to vaccine mandates. And in fact, I made in my prayer on my Sunday school class, I thanked God for vaccines, which I do, because of vaccines, a lot of the old people in my church, none of the old people in my church have died of the coronavirus. That's a pretty cool thing. Most of the old people in my church got vaccinated. I don't see them getting vaccinated as a problem. I think mandatory vaccination, that's stepping on some different lines. But the fact that, so you have the coronavirus come out, you also have the continued development of genetic drugs. You know, we've had genetically modified organisms, GMOs, and so that's been a conversation in some communities. So there's tons of stuff going on at all these different levels. And what I've found interesting is that I have some anti-vaxxers in my life, the old style anti-vaxxers that were against the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, questions about vaccinations and autism, all of this stuff. Me, I listen to that. It's like, anything involved in this stuff, in my perspective, is a matter of a lot of odds. They do the testing. The vast majority of people seem to be okay for now. You stick it in your body, you roll the dice. But the truth is, anytime you stick almost anything in your mouth that you haven't grown yourself, you're rolling the dice. So my take on it has been, yeah, could we have a really unhappy surprise 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now because of vaccination now? Could be. Have vaccinations seemed to really retard the growth and spread and severity of the pandemic? Looks that way. So life is about a lot of risk. And so you risk if you take the vaccine, you risk if you don't take the vaccine. Off we go. And I see people getting all dogmatic, people who are against dogma getting all dogmatic on some things. And it's like, I'm just, you know, I'm not a virologist. I've got no expertise in the development of mRNA vaccines. I don't even really know what it all means, but there's a system that did some testing, or at least alleges to, and they stick it in my arm. And so I got two shots of Pfizer and didn't really have any side effects. And did I have coronavirus before I got vaccinated? You know, early on in March of 2020, I had about 2 days where I felt ill, had a fever and headache. Could that have been me having the coronavirus? Could be. Maybe I have natural immunity. I have no idea. But I watch people freaking out, and it's like, all right, people freak out. And so I guess we've got a new thing to talk about and a new thing to freak out over. But I got vaccinated. My children got vaccinated. Most of the people in my church got vaccinated. I haven't decided to make a big deal about pushing it. I haven't decided to make a big deal about complaining about it. I'm just sort of riding the wave, looking around, because it's not really my area. So I don't know if that satisfies your curiosity.
No, it just gives me some context as to like where you are, like in the broad menu of viewpoints on this. Because again, like I said, usually I'm listening to almost every single one of your podcasts. So it just so happens that I haven't been. So I don't want to like launch into something plain. And as you were speaking, actually, I started like actually realizing where I wanted to go. This, as usual, the moment the conversation, I have something like planned out in my mind as to what I want to ask, and then it just kind of evaporates the moment like it starts. Oh, not just with you, but like in many situations. So up until when I have been following your channel for a good 2 years, this is going to be an oversimplification. However, you know that I know a fair amount of the nuance of like what goes on, but I'm just going to, a lot of like what's happening just with your channel and a lot of stuff in this space is really like Christians in the scientific age, let's call it, whatever age you want to call this, post Enlightenment era. It's all been about trying to like find some need or place or like hole that has been left by the vast enterprise of science, where like Christians can reinsert, or just religion itself or spirituality writ large can more structured religion can find its hole, namely Christianity in your channel, but like in other spaces. Whether there's actually a need for it, and is there a need for it? What is the need? Like, and a lot of it has been on psychological and socio-psychological terms across, or maybe metaphysical, but very abstract frontier level metaphysics, like in terms of like the very broad questions for which we all know that there are no answers, scientifically speaking, right now. So that those have been the areas. We've just been punted to the frontier, and we've also been playing around in terms of like, you know, organization of society and all that stuff. However, the question is, what if we had just been framing this wrong all along, like in a drastic way? And I'm not even going to posit the actual specific, not theory, but the actual specific way in which we could be wrong, because there's only one area which I know that an entire scientific paradigm, as much as I know anything, as much as I know, much as I know water is wet, or as much as I know, maybe that's an exaggeration. As much as I know, as much as I can trust any, as much as I know quantum mechanics is a thing, or as much as I know Newtonian physics is a thing, what if you found out that one of the major scientific paradigms was completely on its head, completely wrong, completely wrong? So there are two questions which arise here. One question being, we all are very conscious of like how we appear, like everyone, including myself. So even when I went about this current, and I will not specify, this current paradigm, which I've been looking into with a lot of you know, Google research, they call it, but no, I was doing more than that. I was like, with a lot of like, a lot of depth. I was very aware of socially, like how you appear when you start to make claims about something which is not just a, not just a critique of a certain establishment domain of knowledge, but like a complete rejection of it. So, but, so that being the case, us all having this social radar, like what would it take for a person who is, again, I'm not an expert, that's the excuse people give, right? I mean, myself included in many domains, but where there are people who are speaking out against other paradigms, which I'm not an expert in. But what would it take for us as laymen to actually come to terms with the fact that an entire scientific paradigm could just be completely flawed? What do you think? It's more like a building of an epistemological tool set. Well, how somebody would, not being an expert in an area, how would a metaphysical detective would go about observing a certain domain of science, not being an expert, and actually coming to grips with the fact that it could be completely on its head? And the second, I know that was a lot, but the second point of this, which you can maybe address later if we have time, would be how would that change our entire worldview of how we've been viewing like religion, like, oh, trying to find some small place or like a frontier place where we could fit it in, especially, namely Christianity, especially. How would that affect the belief? How would that affect people's belief in the religion itself if it just so happened that the world was in the manner that someone who, the world was in the manner which I just been described, where an entire paradigm could be wrong and also intentionally wrong. Like as much as something can be intentional over a long time, but intentionally wrong. I know that's a lot, but yeah.
That's why I take notes. Yeah, it is a lot. And it's very interesting. It's a very interesting little couplet. I don't know if we'll be able to get at both of them, because when I start talking about one, it's probably going to shoot us into some different directions. But let me kind of repeat back to you some of what I heard. So when I was in college, that's when I first read Thomas Hume's the History of Scientific Revolutions. And I read that book in college, and so I certainly didn't grasp the whole thing. But as I was reading it, I grasped enough of it to sort of have a paradigm shift in my imagination of how science and knowledge and the world works. That's exactly what that book did. That book itself was a paradigm shift for many people, because prior to that, we had in our scientific imagination sort of the myth of progress, which was one steady, modernistic evolution of knowledge that we continue to know more and more and more and more in a very linear way. And Kuhn's idea said, no, we sort of are always competing, and there's sort of a regime. It sort of puts science back. It sort of frames science in a socio-political sphere rather than this modernistic view from nowhere that science just continues to progress because of the simple accumulation of knowledge, and we as impartial observers see the knowledge no more and simply no more than our ancestors did. Instead of understanding that science itself is in many ways, our knowledge itself is deeply socially constructed. And I love what you added into it, because you said, basically, what if we're seen to be wrong? Because when you shift science from sort of this modernistic accumulation of facts and ideas into much more a sociological frame, we recognize very quickly that issues of status, social status, come to play. And because we're human beings, and because, you know, you can go back to Jordan Peterson and his lobsters and serotonin and yada, 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 we really like being top lobster. We like the attention, the favorable attention of our peers. We reputation matters. I was listening to Mary Beard's History of Rome, and going back over the story of Lucretia, where, you know, Lucretia is married, and she's sort of the archetype of the perfect Roman wife. And one of her husband's friends approaches her for sex. And you know, basically gives, you know, pulls a knife out and says, you know, if you don't have sex with me, I'll kill you. Go ahead and kill me, because her reputation is worth more to her than the actual, you know, the physical act of violation by one of her husband's friends. We are that committed to reputation and social status. And that's not a new thing. The Greeks, I was just reading this morning because I'm working on my sermon about Thessalonians. You know, the Greeks thought that fame was really the only way to transcend death. And fame is, of course, a function of reputation. So, and I love, you know, so we started talking about the epidemic. And when I think about the epidemic, I mean, obviously, I'm not happy we are in the midst of this pandemic. Not only has there been tremendous loss of life, but it has been a tremendous pain in the neck to have to deal with masks and restrictions and shutdowns and all of this stuff, even though in the United States, it hasn't been as brutal as in some places like Australia and Canada. So, but if we have this trouble anyway, let's learn from it as well we can. And I think what we have seen through this pandemic is that a lot of the assumptions about knowledge and authority and knowledge making, especially with respect to mass media, has been tremendously undermined. For example, I just saw on Twitter someone basically constructed a little GIF of sound clips about the efficacy of the vaccines. These vaccines are 98, 99, 90. And of course, now the Delta virus comes in, variant comes in, yada, 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 yada. And so now, even though you're vaccinated, you should wear a mask if you're inside. And people are watching this. And all of this suspicion about authority, knowledge, truth, science, it's all now very much in a social constructivist frame. Whereas prior to this, people imagined it much more in a modernist frame where there are all these facts. Now, someone with a part of this function is a function of higher and lower resolution of knowledge. My impression is that if you would have spoken to a doctor who has detailed experience about vaccines, they will say vaccinations are not silver bullets, for example. In I had a medical checkup a couple of years ago, and the doctor said, oh, I want to boost your measles vaccine. I want to give you a measles vaccine booster. And I thought, I had those measles vaccines when I was a kid. But he had, you know, after my usual blood workup, I have a very thorough personal physician. And he said, well, I think your measles immunity is a little low and stuff is going around. So let's give you a booster. And I didn't say, mandatory vaccine by my medical professional. I said, stick it in me, doc. I don't think it'll kill me. Off we'll go. And so I got a measles vaccine and off I went. So I think you're right in that there's a ton of paradigm shifting going on, and watching friends and relatives of mine who didn't have a thought or objection when the pediatrician was pumping their toddler full of substances from bottles and through syringes, now suddenly are throwing fits and refusing to get vaccinated. It's kind of like, well, that's interesting. What's happening? And I think it has very much to do with the kinds of issues you just raised. Now, part of the constructive narrative that is our lives really is tremendously biased. And so depending on if you believe you're a spiritual person and a Christian who, you know, is always following the will of God, and so now suddenly you have a religious objection to vaccines, or if you're a rational person who follows science, and now suddenly you have a rational objection to vaccines, that twisting I see mostly based on the person's self-constructive narrative, who they see themselves to be. So Christians are out there having Christian complaints about the vaccines, and rationalists are out there having rational complaints about the vaccines. And I look at them and I think, you're having a human complaint because and you're just framing it different. So I think the current situation we're in is very much a function and a rather interesting experiment in changes of paradigms, changes of authorities, and changes of status. Because, you know, one of the things I noticed right away when the pandemic hit, so I am a person of Northern European descent. You know, I'm got pasty white and very light eyes. But I've lived most of my life in African American communities or Caribbean African communities, let's say. And I noticed right away when this pandemic hit that people believed, depending on basically their structures of belief and authority. And so college educated people tended to be predisposed to listen to CNN or the New York Times. People who generally voted for the Democratic Party had their structures of authority, and other pasty white people like me had their kind of countercultural, counter-narrative structures of authority, and people sort of tracked along those lines. But because those are just some of my network, I was watching Black folks and homeless folks and Asian folks, and I was watching all these other communities act very differently because they have very different structures of authority. And it's a lot of that has to do with our assumptions about the way the world is, how we should operate, who is for us, who is against us, who can we trust, who are we suspicious of. And so as I just paid attention, usually with my mouth shut, who was getting a vaccine right away, who was suspicious about the vaccine, what are they saying about the vaccine, what are they saying about the vaccine? It's just been fascinating watching this epistemological universe play itself out in the midst of a new variable, which was COVID-19. So I probably answered none of your questions, but that's what your thoughts prompted in me.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I know. Now I'm going to really start making some bold claims, because I wanted to, again, I've been kind of like subconsciously like curating what I wanted to say throughout this conversation. But now it's really going to seem like it's going to go off the rails. So you remember everything that you said about virology in the beginning and what you believed, just from your layman's perspective? I'm going to make the claim right now that it's all completely upside down. It's
okay.
And the next prediction is within 6 years. And not because of some me predicting some evolution of knowledge within the sphere of virology or medicine in general. 6 or 7 years, I don't know, like in and around that, the entire paradigm of virology will be or the notion of viruses as these discrete distinct particles which are capable of especially the ones which are claimed to be floating around in the air infecting people, that's going to be completely my claim. I'm not expecting anybody right now to accept this, but like I said, I know this as well as I know anything, just from looking into this at a normal level of depth. All of that entire paradigm will be tossed out the window, and it'll just be a footnote to a medical history. So all the stuff that we're encountering now, my claim is that based on a completely flawed paradigm, and not unintentionally so. And now here's the interesting Rubicon that I crossed the moment I've had this. When you become convicted of a belief so outside of the norm, it literally flips the entirety of like your view of not just that one paradigm, but obviously every other paradigm. And I've decided not actually consciously decided not to even look into the other paradigms, because you know, I don't know, like Michael Malice was saying on one podcast, you take one red pill, not the whole bottle. So I've taken my one red pill, and just so that I don't completely garble myself into a state of self-induced schizophrenia. I'm sticking with this one thing that I know for certain is completely flawed. So that being the, it, but it really, I mean, we all accept in the abstract that like there could be forces, there could be like corrupt, like, you know, like not almost like, you know, you used to talk about school spirit and then like how a company could have a spirit or like there's a principal, it's a principality, you can become like a principality. And we all kind of accept kind of in a Hegelian sense of like all of these massive multi-people, like like global entities can, or whatever, massive companies, massive groups of people can function as if they have an intention of their own. That side of it, we all acknowledge. But I think like within polite society, it's almost been completely neglected to be like addressed with any sort of like credibility, the notion that there actually could be true intentions behind certain, wayward actions affected upon humanity. And I know that like, because any logical person would not just write that off from the outset. It would, but in their mind, it's just a psychological aspect that people would not take that seriously, myself included, until I knew something for certain. Before I knew this one thing for certain, again, as certain as anything can be without getting into the metaphysics of it, I was always hedging on the side of, you know, the more like, well, there are game theoretical reasons for people acting in this way, or there are, you know, social reasons, or and then there's incentives pushing them in this way and inertia like stopping them from going in that way. And that's what gives the appearance of intentionality to something. But at this point, with what I know about virology, and just a upside down backwards, it actually, in a strange way, it completely eliminates any, just this one thing has completely eliminated any doubt I had in the existence of God. I still have questions about God's nature, but just the fact that this paradigm is so, it's just not what it was supposed, well, not what it was taught to us to be. It's just completely reshaped. And I was thinking, let's say, I don't want anyone, like I don't you or anybody else to like misconstrue me in like when I say this. This is virology. This is, if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, that virology being wrong isn't like the biggest upset. Like if everything you knew about virology was bogus, this would literally just be a footnote in history. But I was thinking, what if something like, I'm not even going there, but what if some are not, because again, I don't have the tools to attack that area, but like what if, for example, just a thought experiment, literally thought experiment, not subscribed, I disavow. What if everything we knew about cosmology was completely wrong? Two, that would literally change. We talked about all these ways in which like maybe religion could reassert itself, like in all these subtle ways, which only people who are esoterically delving into the nuance of philosophy and psychology across like decades, centuries would even like, but literally, if something like cosmology was proven to be like on its head wrong, that would, the entire world would just wake up to the stark understanding or like acknowledgement that God exists. And again, I'm not saying this way or that way when it comes to cosmology. I know nothing. But I know that one field is wrong, completely wrong. So I don't even know, like, I don't know. Those are just my verbal diarrhea, because again, it came out much more garbled than I expected. But,
it's always much more garbled when it comes out of your mouth than it is sort of in your picture in your head of it. I get that's why my videos are so long. I love what you just said, and it's totally true. And I'll give you two examples of it. Number one, I was a missionary in the Dominican Republic. I watched a lot of, they would call them something like health brigades. They would come in and they would come into, because I was a missionary, I was sort of like a gatekeeper for people wanted, get all these well-meaning people from North America, Christians or non-Christians, who wanted to help the world and save the world. And so they somehow want to get down to the grassroots. And because I'm there and I speak English and I speak the local language and I have a network, yada, yada, yada. So via me, this group from, let's say, Youth with a Mission or the Christian Reformed Church gets access to a tiny little community in an insignificant little Bate, which is sort of a workers' camp in the middle of these vast sugarcane fields on the and south East Hispaniola. And so I go down there and I watch these college kids come down and they've got someone translating Spanish or something. And they're sitting there lecturing all of the people of this little bate about germs. That there are these tiny little things that you can't see called germs. And these germs are making your children sick. And they're in this ditch water that you're basically drinking and mixing with milk powder to feed to your infants. And you're doing this because of ideas in Dominican society that, you know, really plump, healthy looking children drink milk powder and don't breastfeed. And, you know, the whole thing that, you know, we've been talking about forever. And I just watch because I know the people that they're talking to, and I just watch them and they're just sit there. It's sort of like the people who would go to the bread missions on Skid Row and be like, okay, we got to listen to the preacher talk about Jesus. And afterwards we get the meal. And so they sit there politely and they listen to all this talk about germs and, you know, taking the babies off the ground and keeping the chickens and the pigs out of the hut and yada, 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 because they're hoping there's going to be a handout at the end. And the handout is something that they can use. And this whole germ theory is bogus. And in the meantime, if, for example, at that point, my oldest was a toddler himself, and I'd carry him around, and sometimes I'd carry him around when it was cloudy or even rainy. And I remember one time I was walking down my street with my toddler and it was just starting to drizzle, and a woman just flew out of her house and say, se hace daño, you're hurting him. What do you mean I'm hurting him? You've got him out here in the drizzle. Don't you understand what this does to a child? Of course I laugh because, but that's a perfect example of, let's say, the entire paradigm of virology was overturned in the next 6 years, and suddenly people all over the place have absolutely no problem believing in spirits or God or anything like that. I totally believe that. The second example of that is, of course, the fall of the discarded image, because basically when Galileo and others were able to demonstrate that physics below the moon were operating above the moon, the entire ancient paradigm that had been cobbled together over centuries from Aristotle and through Christianity, and, you know, that was supported by the Vatican. I mean, Galileo got in trouble. The Albert Berg, guy who watches my videos, just did his own little video on this that I linked to in Twitter. What did a wonderful little half hour talk about this. It was really cool. Galileo, with that one turn, dethroned a worldview that they had taken centuries and centuries and centuries to construct, that a whole civilization basically assumed. And with Galileo, that entire edifice came tumbling down along with it. God and the music of the spheres and heaven and everything, just because Galileo is dropping balls from a tower in Italy. So what you're describing is human history. And I think you're absolutely right that we all sort of walk around in our epistemological bubbles imagining, well, I'm, you know, our whole society, well, it has to be science-based. And it's like, you don't really act that way. You act on the basis of your little epistemological bubble. And I love the way you framed this whole thing. You know, if the entire paradigm of virology, that there's these tiny little sort of semi-living things, because our virus is alive or not alive. I mean, that's a whole debate. These semi-little living things that sort of, you know, they're parasites basically, and they take hostage our cells and they cause things to go in our bodies. And, you know, if that entire paradigm gets overturned, then tons of religious stuff sort of gets reimagined. And in many ways, it could be said that, you know, the Protestant Reformation is part of this reimagining, and secularity is part of this reimagining. But at the same time, to your big point, which I think is an outstanding point, it's also the case that if, let's say, virology were overturned and our entire perspective on the world changed, not much would change. not as much would change as we imagine it would. Just like when the discarded image was overturned, people still went out their front door, managed their crops, talked to their neighbors, were married and were given in marriage, yada, yada, yada. So human beings have this amazing capacity to have your world change overnight and hardly at all at the same time. I love the way you frame this, and it's such a cool idea. I really hope you're bold enough to let me share it at some point, because, you know, I know YouTube would be all upset because we're talking about COVID-19 and vaccines, and they're like, don't say anything that breaks the positive narrative. We're going to put a little bar underneath saying, here's Wikipedia, because that's really where we know the truth. You know, I mean, there's just so much bullshittery going on in our culture right now. But I love the way you frame this, because I think you are exactly right. And what you have said has happened. I've seen it with my eyes, with Haitians and Dominicans listening to these medical brigades, what they call them, brigades. It's like, what are they, communist cells coming from youth with a mission from American evangelicals? It's just crazy, but you're exactly right. And it's a powerful, really cool thought. If you recognize that we are that irrational, that all of this fabrication about our vaunted rationality is sometimes just a fart in the wind. So,
yeah, I didn't even think about the fact about YouTube and the warnings and the you might get your first community guidelines strike.
It could happen. This will definitely be demonetized. It's like, oh, YouTube is going to take $5 away from me. I'm trembling.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that what you said, actually, that the last point about, like, yeah, in one sense, everything would change, but in another sense, nothing would change. That's a strange paradox. I guess, like, the only way to resolve that would be the changes. It's kind of like when someone dies or something. It's like the death of a loved one or something. Like, the world has changed. It's just like your immediate actions don't change imminently, but they change drastically over time. So I guess that's kind of the resolution of those two things. You're kind of like in a, well, I guess it's, I mean, it's almost like if you're in a war and someone just got blown up next to you, and you're all trying to trek and escape, like, this horrible or war-torn area or something. Well, you'd still, most likely, your survival instinct would kick in, and you'd still keep just trudging along in a certain direction. But at the same time,
in a right,
amplified state, just meandering. But I think the one point which I would. There was a lot of verbal diarrhea, so I'm not saying that you should have addressed it.
This channel's all about verbal diarrhea. I should probably rename it Verbal Diarrhea. Subscribe.
The one point you didn't address was, so on the one hand, we have the paradigm crumbling, and then what ramifications that would have. And then on the other hand, we have, like, what if it was shown that all the conspiracy theorists, quote unquote, were actually right, more right than the dissenters, that there actually was a body with that level of power and that much foresight and sophistication over close to a century, perhaps more, that had been able to willfully promote and utilize a fraudulent field, basically, if I am right. And I'd stake my house on it at this point, on me being right on this one particular point. So that's how seriously it psychologically has had impact on me. But, like, so just that in the little time we have left, just if you could touch on that.
Well, that happens all the time. If you read, maybe I sound, now I'm going to sound like an old history buff. If you read history, history is in many ways a record of exactly what you've been talking about, because our salience hierarchies in terms of our interest in the past revolve around exactly the moments you are describing. And almost every regime change is, at least those, let me say it this way. Almost every regime change that isn't just done at the end of a gun, which is how most of them are done throughout history, is because everyone starts seeing the world through different eyes. And so the conquest of Christianity over paganism in the Roman Empire. Now, these things happen slowly often. I mean, they might take decades or centuries, but they happen all the time. Because as you basically noted, the worlds we inhabit are in fact constructed. And they're constructed on culture, they're constructed on symbolism, they're constructed on social status. And so it's an astounding thing to read in the Revelation, the book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, to have John write to the churches in Asia Minor, well, you know, right now you're kind of persecuted and small, and everyone around you just imagines you to be weird and crazy, but you're going to inherit the world. And now a lot of groups think that, but what's crazy is that that's right there in the Bible, and then it happens that the book of Revelation is followed by Constantine and is thought of followed by Theodosius and is followed by, the Roman Catholic Church and Western history and the rise of these European powers that colonize the world. The book of Revelation comes to be. And when, you know, whether you believe it's John, the disciple of Jesus, or another one of the Johns that wrote the book of Revelation, or someone in that community, however you want to construct it, they were right. They said, y'all little people who are believing in Jesus, and you're going to have this vision of him coming down to the world, and you're going to inherit the earth. And they do. The meek inherit the earth right there. It's in history. And so this idea of this, a conspiracy theory, and in some ways you can almost any theory sufficiently large for us to inhabit can be construed as a conspiracy theory. The idea of the devil, you know, being the prince of this age is a conspiracy theory of sorts. The idea that Jesus, the resurrected, the crucified and resurrected king who manages the global path of history and the Spartan, the parking space that the evangelical soccer mom really needs to find right now, is a conspiracy theory. I mean, it's almost any idea worth living inside of can be construed as a conspiracy theory. And so it's delightful.
So here's like maybe like just the last bit of last, obviously it's the last question I'll ask you is like, put yourself like in my shoes. Somebody who's now living in a world where he believes is truly convicted that like virology is fraudulent, completely made up, literally made up. Now that just reshapes everything that's happening in the world. This is no longer down to inefficiency, incompetence, bureaucracy, and all the usual suspects in terms of like all the governmental mess ups and malfeasance towards all the usual suspects. It's no longer pinnable on those culprits, but it's now something completely other. And I'm in this position where I have this knowledge. No, maybe some may say delusion, I say knowledge, but like how would me in this position go about convincing perhaps people like yourself, very intelligent people, hyper intellectual one might say, but who tend to hedge on the side of let me wait it out and see and not act in urgency? How? Because there is a time for urgency, you would agree, like there's a time for everything under the sun. Oh, to get Ecclesiastes about it. So how would such a person, you know, try and bridge that gap? Because here's another thing I see, there are people who have uncovered some of these truths, like with regards to virology and just allopathic medicine in general, and like governmental, global government, basically, unseen global government. And so, but those people know their little pocket of knowledge very well. And they also are kind of the people who are willing to go and take action regardless of how stupid they look. They're not the kind of people who are going to wait, hang back in this. However, they, I don't know if you've heard the term bicameral. Yeah, so like bicameral is like kind of like the split mind kind of situation, like where you have one side, which is the intuitive, imaginative, like, and the other side, which is the rational, hang back. Maybe not the best description of that, but it's like I'm almost living in a world where I see those people and they've latched onto, in my view, my firm belief rather, some aspects of absolute truth and have the courage to go out and act regardless of what people think about them. But they, at the same time, lack some of the wisdom in a general sense and historical knowledge that people like yourself and others in the more, you know, like academic, ponderous community, but also hesitant community have. So I'm seeing humanity now split into a bicameral kind of bifurcation and me in the middle, like a very horrible, moldy band-aid, just kind of like trying to like, who's really badly doing his job, trying to like bridge these worlds. And I don't know, like if you put yourself in my shoes, how do you think I should proceed? Like to try and like, because I literally believe we're in the middle of a massive crisis of like epistemology, life, death, people poisoning their children, literally. Like, imagine just if you could just, how would I proceed? How would you?
You have to live as if you really believe what you really believe. And that's remarkably difficult. So one way would be to go full Alex Jones. And the only problem with Alex Jones is not necessarily that he's wrong about things, which he's a human being, so of course he is. But the only problem with Alex Jones is he has done this in such a way that I don't think he will actually achieve his outcomes. If his outcome is something like you're describing, if his outcome is to, you know, make a life off of social media, well, then mission accomplished. He's managed to. Now, Jesus Christ, let's say go full Jesus Christ. Well, what does that mean? Well, Jesus Christ was far sneakier, lived at a very different time when being an outlier would, in fact, get you killed. And went right to the kinds of issues that, in fact, did get him killed. And the resurrection of Jesus Christ basically is his vindication, in a sense of the Creator God who owns the game and has the keys to the entire reality that we live within. So you have to live out and figure out how to live out what this paradigm shift means and all of its implications in your life with ruthless determination and discipline. And even then, nobody may follow you. But if we believe, and this sort of undergirds Western civilization, that truth finally wins out, you may be vindicated decades after your death. But the call would be, and this is where you get into, well, do I really want to bank my life on this paradigm that I believe is true? Or do I want to be a sellout like Vanderclay and kind of look around and say, I don't know, I'm gonna keep my family together and not risk my retirement and not endanger my YouTube channel because it's bringing me all that mad AdSense money, which is hysterical. You know, it's you have to live out your belief. That's finally the test of the gray matter and the theoretical conclusions that we are offering with our flapping lips. So that's what you have to do. But now you have to figure out how to do it in a way that others will see and recognize and know. Now, it cost Jesus Christ his life. It cost Alex Jones some of his you know, social media accounts. You have to live out the truth as you see it. It's the only way. And that's what life is for.
Okay. That's fair enough. And finally, I get the very last thing I'm going to say. It's more of a favor. I never ask people for favors, but the favor I would like to ask of you, and does it just hit me like last 2 minutes of you speaking. In the next, let's say 12 months, 1 year, would you be willing to have a conversation with somebody who's far more prominent than me, who can speak much better to these beliefs, like someone who's pretty popular, like if I can ever manage to, would you be, and this, obviously this is off camera,
yeah, I'd be happy to. Yeah, I have a Calendly app that lets me talk to randos from the internet. You know, a church asked, would you be willing to have a conversation about our senior pastor position? It's like, I have conversations with homeless people about the stuff they have in their dreams. Sure, I'll have a conversation. I'd love to. And especially if it comes through you, because I like you and trust you. And it's anyone that you send to me, I'll of course give a listen to.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's great to see you. So now you're going to let me post this, because this was an awesome conversation.
I have no problem. I just preface it saying that it's just so my intention, like it's not me trying to like use you as I genuinely want to like talk to you and hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I'll risk a YouTube strike or a little COVID-19 thing underneath that the YouTube algorithm listens and says, oh, COVID-19, we have to make sure they're saying the right thing. So I love this conversation and I love your thinking, and it's going to stir in my head for a while, because I think it's really helpful. So thank you.
And thank you for your time. Thank you.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.